I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
First things first, Mac Jones is climbing up the draft boards, but is the Alabama quarterback worth a top five pick? Jameis Winston is known as a gunslinger, so why is he talking about being a game manager? And the 49ers seem primed to take a quarterback at number three. But is George Kittle right that they should stick with Jimmy G? With that, we say good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf, Nick Wright, Brandon Marshall, Kevin Wiles. Who said no? Who gave me a no?
Me.
Brandon.
Is that you?
Oh, come
Brandon?
On. Draft
no?
The 49ers won't flirt with a quarterback. No way, Jenna. No way.
I think they might be flirting.
They do that?
I recognize the flirting anywhere. All right. Let us stick with the draft, start the show. We are 30 days out till we get some answers to a lot of questions. Basically all the questions except who's going number one. We know that. Urban Meyer confirming yesterday the Jags are, quote, headed towards taking Trevor Lawrence. So with the second overall pick, the New York Jets, as we see it, they got themselves four options. Let's run through them. They can draft a quarterback and trade Sam Darnold. They can draft a quarterback and keep Sam Darnold. They can draft somebody else and keep Sam Darnold, or they could trade down. A lot to unpack here. Brandon, I'm going to start with you. Take a look at these four options here. What's the best option for your Jets Jets?
I mean, it's the only option right now. You got to draft a quarterback, and you have to trade Sam Darnold. You get a second-round pick, a third-round pick. Now you're sitting with seven picks in the first four rounds. Joe Douglas, since day one, his first press conference, he said he wanted to build this team through the draft. Now you have seven picks in four rounds. You have everything you need to go build the foundation of this team for the next 10 years. If you do it right, Joe Douglas isn't a great general manager. Joe Douglas got the job because he was a great scout. This is your moment to get it right. This is your moment to solidify your position in Jets history, Joe. Don't mess it up. Go get your quarterback, Justin. And I say Justin because do you really want to put Zach Wilson into this environment? We keep talking about the New York media. You guys live in New York. You know how tough it is. You have to be cut from a certain type of cloth. This dude, Zach Wilson, I love him. He's going to be successful in the NFL, but he's been tucked away in BYU. This dude's done it on the biggest stage 2 years in a row. He is cut for this type of environment. So you go get Justin Fields because he can handle this New York media, and he's a baller. He has all the tangibles you need to lead a team for 10, 15 years, Nick.
Well, Brandon, I'm glad someone finally is supporting Justin Fields. All year long during the actual college football season, all I heard was Justin Fields is going to be the number two pick. And since the game stopped being played, now you're hearing is Justin Fields going to be the fifth quarterback taken. So I'm glad you're supporting Justin Fields. Can we put up those list of the four Jet options? Because I think we can easily eliminate a few of them. So if you look at number four, trade down and keep Darnold, they obviously and clearly have chosen not to do that. How do I know? Because the deal the Dolphins got for the third pick, obviously the Jets could have gotten for the second pick. If they wanted to trade down and keep Darnold, you don't think San Francisco called the Jets first? If they want the third pick, they'd love to have the second pick, and said to them, you can have the 12th pick, two future first and a future third for the second pick. They said no to that. So cross that one off. Draft a non-quarterback. Listen, America, there is one truism in the NFL draft. If you are drafting in the top five and you take a non-quarterback and don't have a quarterback, you've made the wrong pick. There is, even if you get a Hall of Famer at another position, if you were to go back 10 years later and redraft, the best quarterbacks would go 1-2-3, 1-2, 1-2-3-4, depending on how many there are. So your only options are draft a quarterback and trade Darnold, or draft a quarterback and keep Darnold. Those are the only realistic options. And I 100% agree with Brandon that I think if you are going to bring in the number two pick of the draft to be the future face of your franchise, you can't have sitting there backing him up the guy who was the number three pick of the draft a couple years ago. You have to pretend the Darnold era never happened. If you end up, that means trading him for 30 cents on the dollar, you do it. But to me, the Jets have one option and one option only. Draft a quarterback, get what you can from Darnold, and turn the page.
I'm here to keep Sam Darnold. I like Sam Darnold. I want Sam Darnold to have another shot. In fact, Brandon, I have a little business venture for you. I would like Sam Darnold to have yet another pro day so everybody can fall back in love with Sam Darnold. He has lost the narrative somewhere. And it was either when he threw a pick six on his first throw ever. He actually ended up winning the game. Or when he told the Patriots, or he didn't tell the Patriots, told the NFL, he's like, oh, I'm seeing ghosts out there, rather than saying Bill Belichick's defense is awesome. Or when the poor guy got mono and everyone held that against him. During this pro day, you heard the same things you heard about Zach Wilson. He's really smooth. Everything's under control.
Right.
Look at the ball spin out of his hands.
Even-keeled.
He's 6'4". Right, he's 225. Right. He's bigger than Zach Wilson. But he's lost the narrative. So, Nick, I'll go back to you. This guy is going to be on his third coach. He's had no offensive line. He's had no weapons. Why are you so eager to give up on him?
Well, hold on. It's not that I'm so eager to give up on him as much as, and I am kind of eager, I'll explain that. But the Jets made their decision when they didn't make the trade with the Niners. If they wanted to keep Darnold Wilds, what is the possible justification for not getting three first-round picks for your draft pick and a third-rounder?
I don't know.
The only position in the league that can be worth three first-round picks is quarterback. So when they don't make that trade, they are telling the world, we're drafting a quarterback. And you're right, and Brandon, I agree, if Darnold held a pro day, I'm sure he would look great. But what Darnold has working against him is, unlike Zach Wilson, we have seen Sam Darnold in the NFL for 3 years, and he's been terrible. Zach Wilson might end up being terrible, it might be great, might be mediocre. But like we have the actual evidence on Darnold that it hasn't worked for him thus far.
You know what? You and I are right. We're right. The only option is 1 and 2, but you can't keep Sam Darnold, so you got to go with 1. You got to draft the quarterback, and you have to trade Sam Darnold. But Wiles has a point, though. You know, sometimes you draft guys and they go to the wrong situation. You insert Sam Darnold into the Jets organization when you have Adam Gase there, no wide receivers, no offensive line. I don't know if we've really seen the best of Sam Darnold, Nick. I like the kid. Wild showed a video yesterday of the kid slinging it around, and it took me back to 2 years ago. This is when he had mono, and we were sitting on set on Inside the NFL, and I'm looking at Phil Simms. I'm like, damn, this kid can really sling it. This kid can really throw it. I got an opportunity to sit down with them a few times, you know, back in Florham Park when I went there. I really like the kid, but you can't do that in this media. There's no way that the ownership, the Johnsons, and then Joe Douglas, they can sit with Sam Darnold on the bench or even go into the season as their starting quarterback. There's no way you're going to get crushed. Like, we're talking about a New York minute. Like, if you got to make your move right now.
And it might be best for Darnold. Like, I am not sitting here saying Darnold will never be good. Like, you know, Dusty before the show reminded me of the Ryan Tannehill arc, who also, by the way, had the curse of Adam Gase put on him and then went somewhere else and has been very successful. I'm not saying Darnold's career's over. What I'm saying is if he's in New York next year, it's either with the number two pick of the draft staring over his shoulder, or with he will be competing with every quarterback taken other than Trevor Lawrence. Meaning, if Darnold has a bad
game,
going
to be the headline.
Whether it's Zach Wilson for some, exactly right. No matter where the rookie quarterback is playing for what team, the headline will be, we could have had player X, instead we have Darnold. And so I just think he and the Jets need a clean
Kimberly
break.
Martin.
Yeah.
I was in that locker room for 2 years, 3 years in that market, Jenna. Kimberly Martin, Manise, every week they're going to be right in that. When are we going to see the number two pick? When are we going to see the number two pick? Can't do it.
I think we failed to realize the best thing for Sam Darnold might be to go somewhere else, find a better landing spot for him.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On Saturday, MLB is back. The Braves face Bryce Harper and the Phillies. Then you got the reigning champion, Dodgers, taking on the Rockies. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Rookie. Back here, first things first. Time for drawing a blank. So it looks like the 49ers are going to take a quarterback with that number three pick. But tight end George Kittle says, quote, I want Jimmy G as my quarterback. Don't beat around the bush, buddy. Tell us how you feel. Hey, Brandon, Kittle backing Garoppolo is blank.
Oh, this is Band of Brothers. This is the locker room. This is what happens when you go to battle with your brothers week in and week out. And then also you got to look at George Kittle. You know, he's had a lot of success, and his success came, a lot of it came from that guy, Jimmy Garoppolo. It reminds me of Jay Cutler. In 2014, we were going into the season, and I was negotiating a contract, and things weren't moving fast enough, so we asked for a trade. The New England Patriots stood up and said, you know what, let's go get Brandon Marshall. And then I saw Jay Cutler spinning it. He was looking amazing in our offseason program. I said, oh my goodness, I can't leave my brother. He's going to have an MVP year. And then everything imploded the next year. And then what happened in New England? They went on to win the Super Bowl 2015. I will never forget that moment. Yeah. This is Kittle, man, just being who he's supposed to be, a great teammate, Nick.
Hold on. Before I give my answer, I think Wilds wants to follow up with some questions. Wilds, go ahead. I'll give my answer in a moment. Go ahead. Inquire here, Wilds.
So this is 2015, so Tom Brady has been playing for 14 years at this point and won multiple Super Bowls. And rather than go to New England,
don't remind
the biggest
me.
Franchise in the history of all sports, you saw Jay Cutler spinning it in practice, and you said, oh, I got to get
Wilds.
To Jay Cutler rather than Tom Brady?
Wilds. If you saw him in practice, you would have been like, oh, my goodness, this is the second coming of freaking
they should
Aaron Rodgers, man. This dude was amazing. Oh, man.
Well, it was Tom Brady.
I know.
In Brandon's defense, the Patriots hadn't won a Super Bowl in a decade at that point. They were just about to go win three of the next five. So it had been a long time since they had won one. And Brandon liked the Jay Cutler option. I'm saying this is not going to age well. And here's what I mean. This sounds like high praise. Oh, I want Jimmy G as my quarterback. Wait till you hear the quotes we're going to get from Kittle on whatever rookie they draft. Oh my God, the arm talent. Oh my God, I can't believe this guy's ability. I can't believe he was there at three.
Can't do it.
It's like when someone's in a mediocre relationship and you talk to them. It's like, hey, how's it going? It's like, oh, everything's good. You know, she's a great partner. It's good. Fills in my blanks, those things. And then they break up and there was something new. It's like, oh my, let me tell you about her. She's unbelievable. Funniest person I've ever met. So beautiful. So much fun. Oh my, you can't wait till you meet her. That's what Kittle's going to say when he gets a real quarterback here soon in the draft. So I don't think these comments are going to age well, Wilds.
You think he's going to make a Zach Wilson t-shirt? You think he's going to make a Trey Lance t-shirt so big you can put it over your shoulder pads and wear it to your post-game press conferences? I don't. I think this is true love, my friend. I don't think he's looking upgrade. He came on this very show and said that he loved Jimmy G and wants him to be his quarterback. George Kittle is a loyal guy. In fact, when Jimmy G comes to New England, straight up, Hunter Henry. You can send Hunter Henry out there and back to California. We'll take Kittle, but too, so they can stay together. So, good. We like to two tight ends, not three. We'll send Hunter Henry back to California. We'll take Kittle, who's the new Gronk, belongs in New England anyway.
Clearly. Let's talk some Saints now. They seem to be moving forward with Jameis Winston, assuming he can hold off Taysom Hill. Winston, known as a gunslinger, but says game manager. It's not a bad label. So, Brandon, Jameis cozying up to the idea of being a game manager is blank.
It's game-changing, Jenna. And, Nick, we don't see eye-to-eye on quarterbacks. But I'm telling you right now, buddy, and I've been saying it for 2 weeks. This is the third week, me talking about this kid in New Orleans. Come all in with me, man. I'm telling you right now, Baker Mayfield, we can battle next year. Every week we can battle during the season. We can battle against the kid out in Buffalo. We can battle. We can battle about Tom Brady. But I'm telling you right now, you need to go all in on Jameis Winston. He has it. He spent the year down there with Coach Payton and under Drew Brees. He's going to go to a game-changing dude because you got to go back to 2019. Every time I talk about it, I'm just going to look at 2019, 5,100 yards. 33 touchdowns. I know it's 30 interceptions, but if he's going to a game manager, now those interceptions are cut in half, and now we're talking about him potentially as the MVP next year. Nick, go all in with me, man.
MVP.
Go all in with me, Nick.
Brandon, wow. I love the emotion and the passion. Brandon said that he and I don't see eye to eye on Jameis, which is an interesting turn of phrase because in that 2019 season, that was Jameis's exact problem. He saw eye to eye with all of his receivers, stared them down for 15 seconds, and then threw a pick that went the other way. So I say this is wishful thinking. This is a guy who has always played a certain way, saying he's going to undergo a massive transformation. I would take you back to his last year in college when, by the way, that Florida State team was so stacked after going undefeated and winning the championship the previous year. All they really needed was him to be a game manager. And he couldn't do it. I think he threw 18 picks that year. I am rooting for this to work,
Nick,
because I think it would be fascinating, but it's, to me, it is overly optimistic and wishful thinking.
Can you put me on the screen, please?
Yeah.
Put me on the screen, Nick.
Yeah, I'd love
just
to
imagine
see
the headlines next year. Brandon Marshall, Nick Wright, the only two in America that went all in on the Saints and Jameis Winston. Can you imagine that, man? Let's do it together, bro. I'm telling you. Guys evolve. Guys get better. Sean Payton had him for a year.
Instead, I'm imagining not the headlines, but the tweets, Wilds. These are the tweets I'm imagining coming from every Tampa Bay-affiliated Twitter account in the world saying, here's Brandon Marshall going all in on the Saints as the Bucs win the division by 5 games. I'm imagining those, and I'm staying far away. I'm just backing away from whatever Brandon does, I'm going to slowly slide off screen. So he's just there by himself, Wilds, and he can have that take to himself. That's what I'm doing.
I like it. I like the headline, too.
Ahead,
nothing like to buoy the newspaper industry than a long headline about Brandon Marshall's take on Jameis. Headline, Brandon Marshall and Nick Wright. Like, I don't know. I'm buying this paper. Hey, can we put up Jameis's quote? It was a confusing quote, but it actually makes sense. Being able to not just only do the things that you can do, but being able to do the things that you should not do, like what not to do versus what can I do? Now, it's confusing, but it makes sense.
I love it.
This is a little bone I have to pick with the producers of the show, because every time we have an interesting wide receiver question or something about the NFL, Jenna's like, well, I'm going to go to Brandon first. And me and Nick are like, why? Why are you going to Brandon first? Because I've never dropped a pass in the NFL. Not one. Nick, have you ever run the wrong route? I don't think so. Jenna, have you ever had an offensive pass interference? No. But
never
for some
once.
Reason, Brandon Marshall gets all the credit. Yeah, 970 catches. But guess what? A lot of drops, too. So, hey, me, zero drops. Perfect.
Can you do this?
Game. I'm like the... Oh, go ahead.
No.
And newspaper headlines.
Oh, that was a bobble. Oh, take that. That's like your Jameis take. That was shaky. That wasn't clean, Jenna. Move on. It's embarrassing for Brandon. That was embarrassing.
All right. Let's talk some basketball now. The newest Laker, Andre Drummond, ready to make an impact, says he hopes to cause havoc down in the paint. I'm going to go to Brandon first on this one. Hey, Bird. Brandon.
Here we go.
Drummond's role with the Lakers will be blank.
Ooh, a decade too late, Jenna. Look, this is old school basketball. I love this talk, but at the end of the day, this is not going to win the Lakers a championship. Now, he's going to give you 10 boards, 12 boards, and that's great. But the game is played on the perimeter. There's only two bigs in the NBA today that's really game-changing and doing things that we haven't seen in 8-10 years. And that's Jokic out in Denver, and that's Embiid out in Philly. But those guys are still averaging 42%+ from the three-point line, from the perimeter. So I love this talk because this is the way I loved to play basketball back in the day. But he's a decade late, Nick. Like, this is not going to get the job done out in L.A.
Well, I think it's very, very specific what his role will be. His role will be rebounding. That's it. Those 17 points per game he was averaging in Cleveland, wave goodbye to those. It probably won't even be 7 in L.A. But he is, if you get into the nerdy numbers of it, he is one of the most prolific rebounders in modern NBA history. He actually has the highest rebounding rate in NBA history. And the Lakers are built on defense, and a defensive possession does not end until you secure the rebound. So he will be useful there. Unfortunately for the Lakers, he will not be useful in the NBA Finals against the Sixers because Embiid has eaten his lunch for 6 years in this league. But until they get to the Finals against the Sixers, he'll be a relevant piece for them.
Gosh. That was a lot of takes there. That was like the Russian nesting doll takes. There's just kept on coming here.
Hey, I'm going to say it was goal worthy. Old Andre Drummond, go Huskies, old from UConn days, put up this tweet unearthed 10 years ago. Said, hey, one of my goals in life is to meet and play with or against King James. Okay. You know what? We should have known he was going to the Lakers all along. Although if you just want to play against him, that goal was already accomplished. But now you get to play with him too. So check the box. Go Huskies.
Oh, sorry. I had to raise my hand because Wilds, bonus take on take. Speaking of things that can come back, your old buddy Paul Pierce's take that Drummond should have gone before Anthony Davis in the draft. Now they get to play together. We can see who's better. That was a great take from your friend, Drummond versus Anthony Davis. Now we get to see it.
Can I get a bonus take?
Yeah.
Can I get a bonus take before we go?
Always.
Let me try this again. Let me try this again. Here we go.
Gosh, I hope for the sake of the show this works.
We got it.
Yeah, oh,
there you go.
That was easy. That slow rotation. You did that
would have been embarrassing.
And you know it. Low degree of difficulty.
Hey. Back here with Chris Broussard talking Clippers, talking Bucks. Clippers without Paul George didn't matter. They got 20 or more points from four of their five starters. Big contributors. LA wins big, 129-105. Did you hear what I said? 129-105. There's a score. Nick Wright, did last night tell you more about the Clippers or the Bucks? Bang.
To me, this was more about the Clippers, but not in the way I think most people are going to expect it to have been. And by the way, it's a great win for them. It's an outstanding win for them. And I know what I'm about to say here is going to be a little counterintuitive, but I think, maybe I'm wrong, I think Broussard might actually end up agreeing with me on it. So last night, if you didn't watch the game, why'd the Clippers win? Well, they won because they shot over 50% from three. Most notably, they had Marcus Morris, Patrick Peterson, and Luke Kennard combined to go 12 of 17 from three. Just couldn't miss. And you might say, oh, okay, that happens.
Yeah.
Here's why last night was instructive to why I'm concerned about the Clippers. That's been happening to them all year at an unsustainable rate. Broussard, did you know the highest scoring team in the NBA is not the Brooklyn Nets? It's the Clippers. And more instructively, the best three-point shooting team in NBA history, better than any of the Warrior teams, better than the Suns teams of the 2000s, is this year's Clippers team. Seven of their nine rotation players are shooting career bests from three. And so there's two ways to look at it. One way is this is the best offense in basketball. The defense has come around as of late. And because of that, this is a far more dangerous team than they were last year. The other way to look at it is, do we really think that Reggie Jackson is going to shoot 44% from three in the playoffs? Do you really think Marcus Morris is going to shoot better than Steph Curry ever has in a playoff run in the playoffs? I don't. And so last night to me was another example of them, as they've done through the first 50, 45 games of the season or whatever, shooting lights out and looking great because of it. That to me is so clearly and obviously not sustainable that it's concerning for me if they don't continue the uptick on defense that we've seen over the last few weeks that has taken them from the low teens to around 11th or 12th in the league on the defensive side.
No, look, it makes sense. I mean, they've been shooting 42% from three, and you figure if you do it all year, that's who you are. But I look, three-pointer, you're going to live by it, and sometimes you're going to die by it. But I think the defense, Nick, is important and is legitimately improved. Over this six-game stretch, they've been like seventh in the league defensively. As you noted, they were mediocre all year, but they shouldn't have been mediocre. Yep. That's the thing. This is a team that should be one of the top defensive teams in the league. So if they can sustain this, as you said, defensively, they will be much more dangerous. But I want to focus on the Bucks, and I don't want to exalt the Clippers or bury the Bucks off of one game. But we saw some familiar problems with the Bucks last night. And you talked about the three-point shooting of the Clippers. Well, that's what the Bucks do. Now, their defensive philosophy is to stop any and everything at the rim as much as possible, which is good, But that ends up letting them give up a lot of threes. They're 27th in the league in opponents' three-point attempts. So teams always shoot a lot of threes against Milwaukee, and they make them. They're 22nd in the league in opponents' three-point percentage. So last night, the Clippers, as you said, they got hot, and they buried Milwaukee. And that has happened. They almost had a season-high three-pointers. A number of teams have come close to having a season high or having season highs in threes against the Clippers. The other side of the ball, they backed up off Giannis, and at times he's hitting his shot, and it looks good. But if Ivica Zubac just backed up off of him, gave him the three, gave him the mid-range shot, and Giannis had a subpar game. I know he had 32 points, but only 6 boards and shot 10 of 21, which is low for him. It's his third straight subpar game this year. So those are some concerning things, because it can look like the same old problems are going to haunt the Milwaukee Bucks.
Listen, 2 years ago, everybody jumped on the bandwagon when Kawhi went to the Clippers. And then after the bubble, everybody jumped off. I'm the only one that stayed on. Well, there's a couple other people, but I'm one of the only ones on this show and on this network that stayed on this Clippers bandwagon. Look, there's two different conversations. Last night, Nick, you're right. They got hot. Luke Kennard, 20 points. I mean, he's averaging, though, 9 points on the season. Marcus Morris, he had 25 last night, but he's averaging 12 on the season. And then you got Reggie Jackson, who went for 21 last night, and he's averaging, 10 points, 9 points on the season. So last night was about them getting hot. But they had a great week of basketball. Last night was their 5th win in a row. This team is really, really good. They're number one in offense, like you said, and they're trending to being a top 10 defense. This team can get it done. The biggest question mark around this team was, do they want to play? We're talking about load management, and we're talking about leadership. They're answering the call night in and night out. They're 32-16. This team is about to start a 9-game stretch, home game stretch, and they're going to probably finish this stretch probably number one in the West. Mid-April, note it, write it down. They're going to finish number one in the West come mid-April, Wilds.
Okay. So if the Clippers finish number one in the West, the Lakers are ailing, they go into the playoffs feeling great. Broussard, time to play a new game called Does This Still Have a Heartbeat? Because Kevin O'Connor wrote yesterday that maybe the Heat weren't giving up a bunch of assets to go after Kyle Lowry because they were just waiting. They're like, let's see what happens to Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi wanted to go out with Jimmy Butler the first time around. Let's just see if the Clippers blow up. Do you think now that still has a heartbeat, even after they're on this winning streak, even after playoff Rondo, they can beat the Bucks? Do you think Kawhi is 100% committed to staying in L.A. or San Diego when he's there? Or do you think that there's still some, a heartbeat to him leaving?
You never say never, but I would be shocked. Even if the Clippers go out in the second round or the conference finals, whatever it is, I'd be shocked if Kawhi left. I mean, he's already been on 3 teams, and you don't want to keep hopping around all over the place. We know LeBron went back to Cleveland, but that was home. He had been there before. To hop around to a 4th team, a guy that's as good as Kawhi, and he would leave the Clippers as a failure. Make no mistake about it. When he came here, people were expecting him to lead them to a championship. If he goes to Miami with his tail tucked between his legs, it really looks bad for him and for his legacy. Looks like he couldn't lead a team to a championship because he, wasn't the leader in Toronto, wasn't the leader in San Antonio, and wouldn't be the leader in Miami as it would be Jimmy Butler. Also, as you said, he's from L.A., so I don't think there's much of a heartbeat there. No matter what happens to the Clippers, I think he's in L.A. to stay.
Well, I'm going to say this. I wouldn't bet that he's going to leave, but I think depending on how the Western Conference playoffs shake out, the Clippers are far more likely to lose in round one than they are to make the NBA Finals. And if they have another playoff run where they don't even make the conference finals,
especially if Paul George struggles, because keep in mind, Paul George, they just signed to that max extension. Kawhi didn't sign one of those this offseason. Paul George did. Then I do think Kawhi Leonard's going to have to ask himself, can I win here? Because the Clippers have no draft assets left.
If
any salary cap flexibility was wiped away when they gave Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard matching $64 million contracts, they're tied into Paul George. Obviously, the plan has been bring Kawhi back. And Kawhi, by the way, and I don't know if it was Brandon or Broussard that mentioned it about last year, my criticism of him about not playing regularly, too much load management. He right. has answered that bell this year. He has answer been, he's not playing answer. Every single game, yep. but you're not asked to play every single game. He is not detached from the team. He is not missing more games than any other healthy superstar. And he has played at an excellent level. So I want to be fair. I want to give Kawhi full credit because he's earned it. I just don't love the Clippers roster as a whole. And I think right now they are being
number one in
artificially
offense?
Inflate. Yeah, because Brandon, in some, this is the comparison I would use is this. If you have an NFL team that's 11-1, but every close game they've won, and there have been in those 11 games 20 fumbles between them and their opponents, and they've recovered 17 of them, you're like, oh, that's going to start reverting to the mean. That's going to start going the other way. I don't think the Clippers have the personnel of the number one offense in basketball, yet they have it. I know they don't have the personnel of the greatest three-point shooting team in the... Brandon, hold on. Brandon, you don't think they have the personnel of That's the fair, greatest dude. Three-point That's shooting fair. Team ever. Hey, you, like, nobody hey, thinks hey, that. Nobody's go. Like, this is Here's the greatest shooting team ever.
Let's go back to football. Since you want to use football terms, let me go with the Bill Parcells said. I love Bill Parcells, like one of my grandfathers. You are what your records say you are. That's who you are. So right now, they're telling us who they are. So that's what it is, Nick.
Well, their record is one game ahead of the Lakers, who haven't had Anthony Davis in a month and haven't had LeBron James in 2 weeks. So the record's not great. But the scoring, three-point shooting's unbelievable. But I just don't think it's going to sustain.
That's who they are.
Personal.
All right.
We'll see.
Why go to the East?
You know who Grandpa Parcells would like? Zion Williamson. Let's talk some NBA medals. I'll talk, you talk, we'll all talk at the same
time. Oh, yeah.
It's going to work.
Put him at
another
tight
terrific
end.
Night last night. 28 points. Big win over your Boston Celtics, Nick. But too much competition around the league to get a medal. Yeah. Nick Wright, who makes your podium?
Yeah, tough. Listen, tough for the Celtics. Evan Fournier, their big trade deadline acquisition. A nice 0-10 in the Celtics debut. But he doesn't Stop make nine. The podium. Wow. I'll tell you who does.
Not his Celtics.
The three best guards of the last decade. I said that right. The three best guards of the last decade make the podium. Who is it? You're about to find out. Steph, 32-5-6. Welcome back, Steph. He gets the silver. Or he gets the bronze, pardon me, the silver. James Harden coming through with a humble little 38-11-13. James Harden in the win over the Timberwolves. So how does 38-11-13 not get the gold? I'll tell you how. Because Russell Westbrook had a game that quite literally no one has ever had in the history of basketball. Nobody's ever had a 35-10-20. Russ had 35-14-21. Every once in a while, Russ goes in the way back machine to 2017, Russ, and just puts on a show. Last night was one of those nights. The three best guards of the last decade are our three medal winners this evening, Jenna. So there is your podium, Steph, Harden, and Russ.
Brandon's getting dressed. What's up, Brandon?
No,
Brandon,
I'm just going to hold up my Harden. I'm going to hold up my Harden jersey. Here's the deal. This weekend, he had a 44-point triple-double, and I get it, you know, but you threw him at silver. You wanted to give Zion the gold yesterday. All right, I get the 21 assists. I'll give you that one. I just want the record to reflect that you keep giving him the silver when he could easily be the gold.
Would you have given him the gold?
So there's some type of bias.
Would you have given him the gold? Hold on.
Let's talk
Would you
about
have given
offline.
Him the gold last
Let's
night?
Let's talk about it.
Okay, exactly.
21 assists. Not last night. Not last night.
Come on.
21 assists.
It's good to see Russ get some love. He had a great game. Look, Harden tied Jason Kidd for the franchise record for triple-doubles in a season. Think about that. in what, 30 games or whatever he's played? That's unbelievable. That's MVP-like. I'm just putting it out there.
No, what are you talking about?
I'm just going to test the waters.
What?
Hey, Wilds, who missed the cut last night?
Oh, look at that. Oh, who is that? Trae Young? Is that Steph Curry? Is that Logo Dame? Wow. No, Logo Dre from deep. I want to see this more often. I know they have the shot clock.
He put his whole
down.
Body into that.
This is a shot you should take,
the
buddy.
Whole
and
body
leave it
went
up there.
Into that.
Let everybody know about it. Great job, Draymond.
Tonight, it's the final of the CONCACAF Men's Olympic Qualifying Tournament as Honduras takes on Mexico. That's set 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, only on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Basketball from last night. Nets got Kyrie back, but still just barely beat Minnesota, one of the worst teams in the league. James Harden, though, you mentioned it earlier, Brandon, 38-point triple-double. Good right. for him. Not good enough to get gold in Knicks medals, though. This is a good team. This is a lot of winning. So why are a lot of people calling them the villains of the NBA? Well, how about this? Harden, Kyrie, KD, Blake, Aldridge, 40 combined all-star selections. Harden was asked about the villain label. He said, quote, "Oh, I don't pay attention to it." We got Chris Broussard paying attention to all of this with us now. Broussard, what do you make of the Nets being labeled the villains of the NBA?
This is par for the course. This is what happens when you have a stat team. We saw it in Miami with the big three first year. Remember, they were the villains. LeBron even tried to embrace that villain title, and it really wasn't him. Then KD goes to Golden State. Same thing. They're viewed as the villains because they were stacked. Then throw in James Harden leaving Houston and the way he did it. And people like Nick Wright, who are such, you know, character, you got to be sportsmanlike and all that stuff. They hate that stuff, the way he left. So that add that on to it. And then people are they're fooled by the names. Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge are not in their prime.
Thank you.
This has happened many times before. And so it shouldn't, you know, people are overreacting to those additions. Here's the key, though. This is player generated. And that's the difference. Super teams are not new. The Larry Bird Celtics, who were stacked, added a Bill Walton.
Thank you.
All right, the Magic Johnson Lakers with Kareem, who were stacked, added a Bob McAdoo. And then later drafted James Worthy with the number one pick in the draft. I mean, these things aren't new. Shaq and Kobe, they get Karl Malone and Gary Payton in 2003. What is
Rodman
different is
Bulls.
That they're player generated. And so LeBron caught heat when he put that thing together in Miami. KD caught heat when he goes to Golden State because that was player generated. And this, they're playing in the summer. And KD and Kyrie to Harden, hey, this would be cool if we play together. They kind of brought him to Brooklyn. And then you know they were talking to Blake and Aldridge as well. So that is what fans don't like because it implies, at least a lot of fans take it like, you don't want to compete. You just want to stack the deck right. and win easily, and that is what the fans don't like.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. It's ridiculous, and it's lazy reporting. Let's go back 3 months, the James Harden trade.
Thanks.
Everybody was talking about how could this work out? We've never seen this type of big three. When you go down to Miami, it was different. You know, these are three different type of players. Now you're putting three ball-dominant guys on the same court. How's this all going to work out? And they figured it out. And then let's move forward to now we got Blake Griffin. Now we got LaMarcus Aldridge. And these guys are trending in the wrong direction. Aldridge, who is this guy? Come on, now he's averaging a career low. We're talking about a guy, Nick, who you talked about yesterday saying, well, this is essentially a guy who got cut. You know, usually when you have these buyout guys, you know, the teams just get rid of them. They don't really get rid of them because if they're in the playoffs. Well, he's essentially a guy who got cut. So let's not forget that conversation yesterday. And Blake Griffin, the thing that makes him special is his above-the-rim play. This is a dude who now for the very first time is starting to dunk again, but he went almost 2 years without getting a dunk. So please, they're just names at this point. They're a veteran presence, and that's all they are. So this is lazy reporting to me.
Well, so a couple things. One is Brandon said people were very curious about how they could make it work with all the big three together. And by the way, I am still curious because we haven't seen it yet.
Yep.
We've seen two of the three on the court a bunch. We've seen the three of them on the court for 186 minutes. So I am still a little curious how that's going to work. But listen, LaMarcus Aldridge was bought out by a playoff team because, as Brandon said, he's not good at this point. He's flatly not. Blake, and we've seen now, last night if you watch the game, the best plus minus on the Nets was Blake. His stat line was pretty pedestrian, but he had 5 rebounds, he had 6 assists, and over the weekend in the game Harden had 44, Blake was their second leading scorer with 17. If I were a Nets fan, which I know this is going to surprise the audience, but I'm not, I would be a little optimistic that maybe, yes, obviously Blake's athleticism is 5% of what it was. I would be a little optimistic, though, that his basketball soul was essentially being sapped in Detroit. It was a terrible team, and he wasn't the player he once was. And that I think Blake might actually be able to be a useful player for them. But Wilds, the reason they are villains is not because of Blake and Aldridge. They're villains because the three superstars are three of the most polarizing guys in the league. Brandon, you can say, oh my goodness, all you want. I'm right. Kyrie Irving has been polarizing. He was polarizing at the end of his time in Cleveland. He was incredibly polarizing in Boston. And as soon as he went on his sabbatical this year, he became more polarizing. KD, I haven't checked yet this morning. Right. Well, it's 5:30. He's not on the West Coast anymore. I'm not sure where he is. But I know when he'll wake up, he'll log on to Twitter. And he will be out there, either on his account or a burner account, interacting with us. And Harden, the once upon a time, I was the only man in America defending James Harden outside of Houston when he was averaging 40 points for 3 months in 2019. And nobody cared. And so,
for 2 months because he went to Vegas when he should have been with his team?
Let's not do the Harden argument right now.
Okay, we'll do it later.
Let's not do the Harden argument right now. The point that I'm making is those three guys are, none of them are Steph. None of them are Giannis. None of them are Clay, where it's everyone has a pretty positive feeling about them. All of them cause massive emotions in one direction or another. That's why this team's the villains, because the public has very polarizing takes on the three stars. It's not because of LaMarcus Aldridge, who Wilds, nobody has had an opinion on in 5 years. Nobody's had a hot LaMarcus Aldridge take. It's because of how people feel about Kyrie, KD, and Harden. I think that's pretty clear.
That's right. All right. Do you have an issue? I don't believe that anyone actually thinks they're villains. They're great for the league. We want to see Brooklyn versus LA. That's the best thing for the league. As sure. Our resident NFL GM, are you also the resident Clippers basketball GM? You are, right? It's like a hybrid. It's a hybrid job, right? You can do
sure
both.
Sure is.
Okay. Do you have any issue with the buyout market? The fact that the Nets are paying their cap hit's like $2.1 million for Blake and LaMarcus. And I think the Lakers cap hit for Andre Drummond is like a little over $500,000. If there's any issue, it seems like the market for these, they're not superstars, but certainly collectively, those three guys are their cap hit's less than $3 million. As resident GM, do you think that's fundamentally flawed?
No, because if those players had value on their contracts, Broussard, they would be traded. Think, just go a year ago or two. Yeah, a year ago, Andre Iguodala. Andre Iguodala went to Memphis, thought he was going to get bought out, and they said, no, we think there is value, and we think someone will trade for you. Anyone in the league could have had any of these three players if they wanted to pay their full salary. Andre Drummond was on waivers. Anyone could have claimed him. No one did. So, Broussard, I don't have an issue with the buyout market. It's obviously going to favor better teams, but so is every part of free agency.
The small market, non-glamour teams are upset about it. And you better believe when the collective bargaining agreement comes up again. Now, it's not till 2024, they're going to try to do something about it to keep these teams from getting these very good players, or good players at least, at minimum level salaries. Now, here's the one thing quickly about what you said about the Nets, Nick. I don't disagree that their three stars are polarizing, but I'm not sure they were viewed as villains before Blake and Aldridge joined them. Right. I think people were just concerned about and curious how's it going to work and thought they could be great if it works out. But I don't think they were viewed as villains. I think people are overreacting, as Brandon said, to the names of Blake Griffin and then LaMarcus Aldridge, and it got crazy. And so that's why people are thinking they're villains, even though these last two additions aren't guys that are close to their prime at this point.
So the NFL draft now just a month away, and the winner of the worst-kept secret has to go to Jacksonville. Jags are taking Trevor Lawrence with that top pick. You know it, I know it, Urban Meyer knows it, said yesterday they are leaning that way. So here to break it all down is NFL.com analyst and draft expert, Bucky Brooks. Bucky, thank you so much for being with us this morning. We're going to dive right in with the top pick. We're all talking about Trevor Lawrence. How confident are you that Trevor Lawrence will be a franchise-altering quarterback in this draft coming up?
Oh, I'm very confident that he is going to be the real deal for the Jacksonville Jaguars, because they're going to take him. He's the number one overall pick for them. And Urban Meyer came out of retirement because they had that pick. The thing about Trevor Lawrence, we'll talk about all of the things that he can do on the field, because on the field, he reminds me a lot of Justin Herbert plus a little sizzle. All the things that we saw Justin Herbert do last year in terms of being able to be a pinpoint passer and those things, Trevor Lawrence can do. Trevor Lawrence has the athleticism to do things in the run game. He can buy time. He can do all of that. But his best traits are his leadership ability and his ability to connect with his teammates. And that connectivity is really going to matter as Urban Meyer changes the culture down in Jacksonville.
Bucky, Brandon Marshall here. Much respect to you. Love your work. Two questions for you. Number one, when you think about me, what uniform do you see me in? You know, I played for a couple of teams.
Well, it's hard because I think about the Denver Broncos and having all the catches there. I think about you also balling out in Chicago. The thing that I remember about you is just being a big physical specimen, dominating people with your physicality on the perimeter. How about that?
See, okay, I appreciate that. But what you didn't mention was my favorite team, the Jets, Bucky. What are we going to do at the number two pick? With the number two pick, talk to me. Like, come on.
Okay, so here's the thing. Joe Douglas and the front office, they have an opportunity to really hit the reset button on the rebuilding process. As much as some would say they can do that with Sam Darnold, they can build around Sam Darnold, finally give him the weapons that maybe he hasn't had the first 2 years of his career. You do that by having Zach Wilson come in. Zach Wilson, to me, is the pick for them. I believe they see a very, very special player. And I think when you put Zach Wilson in this offense, because remember, this offense is a descendant or a cousin of the Kyle Shanahan offense. And we've seen what athletic players have been able to do in this offense. Zach Wilson has big time arm talent. He has escapability. He has the ability to run the ball, and he's fearless. And so you get this kind of playmaker there. You surround him with weapons, you have a chance. Also, we have seen the easiest way to build a Super Bowl team is to have a quarterback playing on a cheap rookie contract. In the last 10 Super Bowls, we've seen 8 teams that have had players playing on those rookie deals at the quarterback position. Joe Douglas and those guys understand it. It gives you a 5-year window to really build a big-time team. This is what I think the Jets want to do, and I expect them to do it.
Oh, okay. So Nick, I hate to take your, to steal your take. You talked about this earlier. Everyone is talking about Zach Wilson now, but throughout the season, everybody was talking about Justin Fields as the number two. That's what Nick talked about earlier in our show.
Yep.
So how do we go from, you know, Trevor Lawrence and then also Justin Fields being the top two recruited quarterbacks in the nation going back to high school and then doing it the last 2 years, and now all of a sudden we're not talking about Justin Fields no more as the number two quarterback off the board? How is this happening, Bucky?
I really don't understand it. It's a mystery to me, because if you go back and study this quarterback class, Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence have always been one and two, and the order would flip routinely throughout their time. Having been around both guys when they were high school seniors, both of them are terrific in terms of their arm talent, their ability to lead a team, what they can do on the script and off the script. For whatever reason, people have grown tired of Justin Fields. And they've not only tried to put Zach Wilson over top of him, they put Trey Lance over top of him. I believe this.
Oh, my God.
Justin Fields is going to be a star at the next level. He is going to be a star because he's big time. He's had 78 total touchdowns. We've seen him on the same field with Trevor Lawrence twice. And in both games, I would say that Justin Fields was the best guy on the field. And I know people are going to talk about the interceptions at Indiana and Northwestern that looked like he got stuck. But I'm going to say, in a league where we've seen Josh Allen pop and Lamar Jackson pop, I firmly expect Justin Fields to pop if he pairs up with an offensive coordinator that builds an offense around his talents.
I want to stay on Justin Fields, and then I have a Mac Jones question. But on Justin Fields, do you think he's being hurt by Haskins? Haskins had unbelievable numbers with the same school and was a guy who seemed to go through a similar thing where it's like, oh, might be a top five pick. And then he falls to the middle of the first round and obviously did not work out for him in Washington. Do you think that's affecting Justin Fields' draft stock?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do believe it's affecting him. I think sometimes people scout the helmet and sometimes the transgressions of your predecessors impact the value that you may currently have. That said, and talking to Ohio State coaches, while Haskins was preparing for the draft, they were not very concerned about Dwayne Haskins leaving because they knew they had Justin Fields in the fold. They felt like they could do more stuff with Justin Fields. Obviously, there you're looking at the run game and that element. I think the best thing that happened to Justin Fields was the semifinal game this year versus Clemson, because the quarterback position is rarely talked about in terms of being a tough guy position. But Justin Fields' toughness that was displayed in that game on top of the arm talent and the big play ability, I think that changes the narrative some people may have about him. And I know that there's not a big conversation about him, but I firmly believe someone is laying in the cut waiting for Justin Fields to fall, and they're going to snatch him. And we're going to look back in 3 years and say, why didn't we talk about Justin Fields more leading up to the draft? Because it's clear to me he's the second best quarterback in this draft. And some would argue, and I would argue, that you can make the case that when you go with him and Trevor Lawrence, there are times that you could say that Justin Fields is even a more impactful prospect.
All right, Bucky, I'm not shocked by the rise of Zach Wilson. There seems to be pretty typical that story, a guy who didn't play against great competition but had unbelievable numbers and looks right in the pro day. I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised by the fall of Justin Fields in that almost every year there's one quarterback who starts here, and then once the games are done being played, we tear him down. I am shocked by the meteoric rise of Mac Jones. I watched that guy play all year. I was like, oh, that's a good Alabama quarterback. At no point was I like, that guy's going to be a top five pick. I didn't think anyone thought he was going to be a top five pick. What is happening with Mac Jones? Am I missing it? Or are the other folks that say he could go three to the Niners missing it?
Three.
So here's the thing, and I would say this. Of the five quarterbacks that are in the quarterback class, I would say Mac Jones is the only one without what I call superpowers. Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Trevor Lawrence, they all have superpowers when it comes to their arm talent or their athleticism. And Mac Jones, he doesn't have any of that. I guess he would be Iron Man because the suit does everything. And so when I look at him, I am also baffled by the conversation that Mac Jones is going to be a top five pick. Because in my mind, the top five should be reserved for the special guys. If you can't envision that quarterback being a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback or a perennial Pro Bowler, he shouldn't be in that conversation. The thing that has really led to Mac Jones's rise has been the fact that if you get him one-on-one on the board, he can tell you anything and everything about offense. His football IQ and intelligence and all that other stuff is exactly what you want. The reason that he's being connected to the Niners at three is because there are many that believe that Kyle Shanahan plays football like it's a video game, and the quarterback is simply the joystick. And so if the quarterback is the joystick, maybe Mac Jones can be the guy that can process and do all the things that Jimmy G can't do for him right now. That is why the conversation has been about Mac Jones, is because of Kirk Cousins, Matt Schaub, those guys that have been joysticks for Kyle Shanahan in the past. People are trying to connect Mac Jones with those guys and saying that Kyle Shanahan wants someone like that. While I would contend, if you see that, why not want better? Because Patrick Mahomes made the game so much easier for Andy Reid. Why not aspire to have more? But that is why the connection is being between the Niners and Mac Jones.
All right, I'm going to go in the opposite direction. We saw a ton of Mac Jones at Alabama. We saw a ton of Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. We didn't see much of anything about Trey Lance. He completed 15 passes, and like, that's it. Out in North Dakota. He wasn't playing in Ohio State. So how much of this Trey Lance, or how challenging is it for you to judge Trey Lance when there's not a ton of tape on the guy?
You know what's funny about that? Trey Lance has as many career starts as Mac Jones. Both of them started 17 games. The difference is that Trey Lance played at North Dakota State, which is a perennial power on their level. It's certainly difficult because you're trying to figure out, okay, he's the best guy on the field. How much should he dominate? And they run an offense that they don't ask their quarterback to do a lot. What's interesting, the same things were asked of Carson Wentz. There's a lot of complexity to what they do at North Dakota State in terms of what the quarterback has on his plate, checks at the line of scrimmage, their ability to vary between a traditional pro-style offense to doing some of the quarterback run game and RPOs. I will say this, he's a freak show at the position in terms of his arm talent and his athleticism. You just don't see guys that are 6'3", 230 pounds that can run through tackles like that and also throw the ball over the top of the defense. I think we continue to talk about Josh Allen and those things. I think the Josh Allen ascension last year helps guys like Trey Lance because people have seen what you can do creatively to help a player who may not have a lot of experience, who may have some limitations, thrive. I think Trey Lance benefits from that. He's very, very talented when it comes to playing the position.
All right, after Trevor goes one, looks like there's still a lot of questions. Some good drama come up in the draft. Bucky Brooks, thank you so much for joining us
great,
this morning.
Bucky.
A wealth of information
yep.
as we continue to break it all down. All right, we're going to take a turn. Tonight, it's the final of the CONCACAF Men's Olympic Qualifying Tournament. Honduras taking on Mexico, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, only on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. All right, time for some stories to start your morning, brought to you by Subway. Justin Fields will look to put on a show at Ohio State Pro Day today. Our friend earlier in the program said Fields will be a star on the next level. So, Nick, our resident GM, start with you. Will teams be making a mistake drafting any quarterback other than Trevor Lawrence over Justin Fields?
Well, listen, Trevor Lawrence is to me the only quarterback that you can definitively in this draft that you can definitively say is going to be a high level at worst NFL starter. This has been how he has profiled since he was a high schooler, and nothing he did at Clemson should change your mind. I understand, Brandon, why there would be some concerns about any of the other guys. About Justin Fields, I guess the concern is ball security after he had those couple games near the end of the season with all the fumbles. And I think some of the concern with Justin Fields is, oh, Ohio State quarterbacks haven't been great in the pros. With Zach Wilson, I think it's quality of competition. With Trey Lance, it's small sample size and certainly quality of competition and how raw he is. And with Mac Jones, as Bucky Brooks put it, it's the guy's not great at anything. He doesn't have any, Bucky Brooks said if he's a superhero, he's Iron Man because he doesn't have actually any superpowers. Batman's the same way as well. Batman's just a rich guy with a cape, but that's a superhero take. We don't have to get into it. So I understand that there's concerns about all of those guys. What I don't understand, Brandon, is how much Justin Fields has been hurt by all those football games that weren't played in February and March. Because in January, right, he was the number two pick of the draft. And now it feels like people are like, yeah, he might be the fifth quarterback taken. That part is perplexing to me. So I'm not willing, Jenna, I'm sorry to kind of equivocate. I'm not willing, Brandon, to go out on a limb and say, you're an idiot if you don't take him number two. Because I haven't studied Zach Wilson enough to say maybe Zach Wilson's a little bit better.
Though, Nick?
But what I do think, Brandon, what I do think is, I think you're an idiot if you had him number two in January and now you have him number 22. Yeah. Like if something has happened when the game stopped that made you change your evaluation of him, I don't understand that.
That's the problem. And that's the problem. I'm glad that you brought it up because you can go back to 2016 when these two guys were juniors in high school, Nick. Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, they were the top two quarterbacks prospects in the country.
Yeah.
And in 2017, no same thing. And now we fast forward to 2018, 2019. What has changed? So now we're going off a pro day of Zach Wilson, who I think is phenomenal. I think he's going to have a great career. I really like the kid. I would love to catch balls from Zach Wilson. But at the end of the day, if we go back to 2016 and the number one quarterback was Trevor Lawrence and the number two quarterback was Justin Fields, what are we talking about right now? Like, this dude is built to be the face of the New York Jets franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. That's who he is. I would say that what's hurting him is that he didn't show throughout his career what he showed on pro day. 4.3 speed. Where is that athleticism? Why isn't that showing up on film? This is why I believe why that didn't show up is because at that quarterback position, when you're an athlete like that, what do they tell you? Well, you're like Lamar Jackson. Let's just maybe we'll try you at wide receiver or like this type of swing player in the NFL. So what they do is they try to develop into a pocket passer. I think the best is yet to come for this kid. We haven't seen the best of Justin Fields because we haven't seen him tap into that 4.3 40 on film. He has been phenomenal in the pocket, and you can also say in 2019 when he went against Clemson, he outplayed Trevor Lawrence. 2020 did the same thing. So I don't like that we're now moving on to, Mac Jones and Zach Wilson. The New York Jets need to do exactly what we talked about all show. They need to draft this quarterback. They need to trade Sam Darnold. And then they need to go develop the rest of their roster. They got 7 picks in the first 4 rounds. That's what they need to do.
Okay, but if Trey Lance ends up being amazing, I think you would regret that. And Nick, tell me what you think here. We've got 5 quarterbacks in this draft, right? We got Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson. 2018, really 5 quarterbacks. Baker, Darnold, Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar, picked in that order. That's the way that they were picked is not the way that their careers have ended up. Josh Rosen can't get on the field.
Course.
The Jets are about to trade Sam Darnold. The person with the highest upside, it was Lamar. All of a sudden, it's Josh Allen. But would you draft, if you were in this position, make a resident GM, would you draft highest ceiling but with a bust potential? Like with Trey Lance, like it's got all the skills, but playing in North Dakota State. Like,
I'll tell you why.
I don't know if he ran up against it and only played 1 game. Go ahead.
I'll tell you why. Because they took the safe option with Darnold, and it turns out the safe option wasn't even the safe option.
That's right.
Because that's why Darnold, Baker goes 1, and then the word on Darnold was, well, he might not have as much upside as Lamar or even Josh Allen, but he no chance he's a bust. He was the guy that everyone said, no chance he's a bust. And turns out, even the safe picks are somewhat dangerous. I do have to correct, though, one thing you said, Wilds, and I hate to do it at the very end of the show. You said there are 5 quarterbacks in this draft. As Brandon would tell you, there is a 6th quarterback in this draft. Because who's the sleeper of the draft, Brandon Marshall?
Kellen
Mond. This is the quarterback everyone should be talking about. Kellen Mond. Clutch client, by the way. So don't forget about Kellen Mond.
Hold on.
Don't forget about Kellen Mond, who also has to be included here.
Hold on.
Go ahead,
Brandon. Let me bring it back to this kid, Justin Fields, real quick. Big Ten football happened because of him. He's a true leader.
Oh, that's right.
Go get this guy.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's right.
That's a good point.
Much more to come in the coming days. We got to go. Undisputed starts right now. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.